couple of weeks ago when Brother Marty was here preaching in this place, he read several different verses, and one of them just jumped out at me, and so I jumped on it, I guess you'd say. So what he was reading partially was at that time when after Jesus had been born, it was the eighth day, and Mary and Joseph was bringing Jesus back to the temple. There were certain processes that had to be done according to the law, the law of Moses. It was, you remember back in Egypt when the children of Israel were under Moses, were fixing to be led out of Egypt and no longer be slaves in Egypt. And the plagues came upon Egypt, and the final and last one was the death of the firstborn. And somehow in that process, and it was the death of the firstborn, not only of children, but of animals. So somehow in that process, and God wanted that to be remembered through the ages. So what they had to do under that old law is if you had farm animals, whether it was sheep or goats or donkeys or asses or camels, the firstborn male that was of whatever animal you had, God said, "It is mine. It's not yours. It's mine." And you kill it. You sacrifice it. There was no exceptions. You do that. But when it came to the people of Israel, when there was a firstborn son in a family, he didn't require death in that aspect. What it required was a sacrifice, someone else to take that place. And it was to be a lamb or a young goat. And if you were too poor, you brought two turtle doves. So here we see on the eighth day where Jesus was the firstborn son of Mary. Here you see them coming to the temple, one for circumcision, and one is to bring the sacrifice for the firstborn. And it's two turtle doves. Well, that gives us a little picture into Joseph and Mary not being very well off because they couldn't afford even a lamb, that it had to be two turtle doves. So they're coming to the temple. Luke 2:25 is kind of where I want to pick up with this story as they're coming to the temple. And there was one there that had been to the temple a lot before that. And his name was Simeon. And so let's read several verses here. Luke 2:25. "And behold, there was a man in Jerusalem whose name was Simeon. And the same man was just and devout, waiting for the consolation of Israel. And the Holy Ghost was upon him. And it was revealed unto him by the Holy Ghost that he should not see death before he had seen the Lord Christ. And he came by the Spirit into the temple, and when the parents brought in the child Jesus to do for him after the custom of the law, then took he him up in his arms and blessed God and said, Lord, now lettest thy servant depart in peace according to thy word, for mine eyes have seen thy salvation, which thou hast prepared before the face of all people, a light to lighten the Gentiles and the glory of thy people Israel." Well, I don't reckon it was too hard for you to miss what I wanted to get out of that, being I've been talking a lot about the different names of Jesus Christ that's connected to him. And in this is that Simeon said he was waiting for the consolation of Israel. And so how is Jesus the consolation of Israel? That's what I want to talk about this morning. Consolation is a word that we still use, but the meaning has changed a bit. Just the word consolation itself is, just in any way in my little world, it's mostly like the consolation prize. You know, you're the runner-up, and instead of the little kiddies going home disappointed that they didn't go home with trophies, they get them consolation trophies, you know, to go home with. I have my feelings one way or another about it, but here and now is not the time to talk about that. So, but that's kind of where consolation is with us. But if you look at the word, and y'all are smarter than I am, you already understand, console is the root of that word. It's to comfort or to alleviate or to give rest, to give relief, to relieve a situation. Jesus is the consolation of Israel. Well, let's look at it in a literal sense. Through the Old Testament, there's different ones, different places, prophecies of Jesus all over the place, that there's this one comer coming. Job calls him a redeemer. Isaiah said, "For unto us a child is born, and a son is given." There's one coming. His name shall be called Emmanuel, or God with us. It's coming. There it is. It's happening. But Israel, in their disobedience before God, and I mean as a nation, as a country, as that group of people of Israel, not every single one, but in that body of people, they had sinned before God. They had quit trusting in God. They had quit relying on God and started trying to rely on themselves. There might be something in that that we could take away for our individual selves, or even as Dallas Church, or maybe as a nation that we live in. It's not wise that we would be to rely on ourselves. So that's what had happened to Israel, and God had worked with them, and God had sent prophets to tell them what's happening, what's going on, and they rebelled, and they rebelled, and they rebelled, till finally God said that I'm not going to be in your presence any longer. And for 400 years, silence from God. Was God still watching over them in a certain aspect? But they didn't have the felt presence of God in their midst. It wasn't like how it probably felt when they were marching out of Egypt, as I said before, and it was just so evident God's with them. Or their wanderings in the desert, even because of their disobedience and unbelief to go into the land of Israel and subdue it, and there was 40 years of wandering, God was still with them in a visible aspect. I mean, literally visible. There was at night, fire overhead that kept them warm in the desert. And in the daytime, a big pillar of cloud that maybe gave them shade and kept them cooler by day. And God fed them with manna. There was still a certain presence of God there. And we see that as we go along. You get to the judges, and it's just like, can't you guys get this right? I mean, here you got about 70 years of trying to do it your way and no God around, and you realize it, and you beg God, and he sends a judge among you, and you're back to serving God. And it doesn't take many years, and it's just back and forth, back and forth. And which just goes on and on, as you all know. And God finally said, you're not going to have my presence. So here's this one Simeon, though, that I think Simeon isn't the general group of people. Simeon, it was one that says here that he was a devout man, and he was waiting for the consolation. He had read the scriptures. He knows there's something else better than what's going on. He had probably sit back and watched his country go downhill. I don't know how old he was. I think it was some maybe 70 years before this time is when Rome came and the armies of Rome and took Jerusalem and the country of Israel over as one of their countries that they were now ruling over that part of the world. Maybe he was part of that. If he wasn't, I mean, he literally remembered. I don't know how old he was. But maybe if he wasn't, certainly he had firsthand a telling of it by his folks of what had happened. And he's watched his country in a literal sense go downhill. No longer are they in control of what they're doing. And morality watched their country degrade in a moral sense. And then watch their spirituality be taken over by the Pharisees started their little thing in this void. The Pharisees started making all of these laws. At first they were just laws that were just spoken. They weren't written anywhere. Finally, somebody sat down, one of the scribes, and wrote them all down, all the laws that, besides the laws of Moses and the Mosaical law aspect of it, they had added 613, something like that, more laws to try to serve God. They put heavy burdens on the people. And it was really for their own pride and their own self-satisfaction that we're living up to all of this. We're goody two-shoes, and y'all need to try to do like we're doing. And here's this one Simeon have to be watching what's happening to how he serves God, how he how his nation is no longer serving God that he's a part of, and this degradation going on. And yet he knew from those prophecies, there's one coming. There's going to be a consolation of Israel. And this consolation is more of a noun. It's a person. It's physical. Jesus is coming. He knew that, and he was waiting for it. I would say there's probably other men in that 400 years, or maybe women, that knew that was going to happen. They had read the prophecies. They understood. And their lives came and went. And they were trusting and hoping that that would happen. Simeon was blessed in this aspect, that the Holy Spirit came upon Simeon and said, Simeon, you're not going to die until you've seen it. Isn't that something? It gives me goosebumps, or as I heard somebody say a while back, chicken skin. I'd never heard of that before. I like that, chicken skin. anyway, so here's Simeon. He gets to see that. And we learn from him that he was devout. He was just. He was serving God, even in the midst of all the chaos. Maybe we could take a lesson from that. Are we watching our country, in some respects, morality go away? Are we watching a degradation of our country in many respects? Am I thinking yes? And it doesn't matter which side of this political aisle you might be on. There's degradation that's happening. And Christianity, in many ways, is different than it was when I was a kid. There's just things happening that just seems less spiritual, maybe we should say. And there's some men that jump up that kind of take advantage of this void and leading multitudes away, and they call it Christianity. I'm not sure it's Christianity down underneath. As I heard one preacher say years ago, that Pharaoh enslaved the children of Israel to build him cities of gold. And I'd say there's probably men today that are putting themselves up as preachers of Jesus Christ, but their idea is to enslave the people to build their cities of gold, so to speak. So we see that happening. Yet we have this consolation is available for us. He's come and he's here. But literally, that's what's happening at this time, the consolation of Israel. And Simeon is so blessed to even get to hold it in his arms. Isn't that amazing? And he says, now let thy servant die in peace, that he'd got to see. He knew it was happening. He knew it was happening. Now, so obviously I think there were others. Let me back up and say this. Here's Simeon in the temple. You realize that whatever rooms there were in the temple, I don't know how it all worked and what rooms people were in or not, but Jesus found some troubles in the temple, did he not? Did he not find the money exchangers, those that were changing the money from whatever currency their country was, and they get to Jerusalem and have to convert it to the local currency? And my understanding is not only was Jerusalem and Israel have a currency, then there was the Roman currency, but the temple itself had made its own currency. And so when you come to give your alms, it didn't matter where you're from. You had to go to the money changers right in the temple to change, and they were robbing you blind. Their evaluation of this currency to this currency laid heavily to make them money, if you see what I'm saying. And I got to think that this is just 30-some years before Jesus is turning the tables over and running those people out with the whip that he made. I would assume that's happening already in the temple. And he sees this degradation. What a contrast. Here he's holding the consolation of Israel. And there it is, right there, the mess going on. So here he is. That's the story. But how does that, where's that going to work in for you and me? You know, that's, if we can't make it personal, it's a nice story. And let's go downstairs and eat and go home. You know, that's kind of how that is. But I want to make it so it's personal. How can we fit that into our lives? Where does that fit for us? Well, first off, it says that it's the consolation of Israel. I think that means literally the people that were of the line of Israel, the Jewish. We say Jewish line. Actually, if you say Jews and you say Israelites, you're talking about a subset. Jews are a subset of the Israelites. Jews are from Judah or Judea. It's a subset of the Israelites. Israelites are all 12 tribes, if you see what I'm saying. The Jews is the subset or from the son of Judah is where that's at. So here's... it says that he's the consolation of Israel. That was talking about the physical Israelites. Okay? Well, you know, they're maybe still around today, and that day they could trace it. I mean, they kept records, and they could trace it. Even Jesus Christ, which is the only true Israelite that can trace his lineage, and we have two places in the Scriptures where it says born of, however it says anyway, that he can trace right back to it. They were very good at that aspect of it. It was physical. It was a nation of people. Yet in the Scriptures, and the Apostle Paul talked to us and says, no more are there Israelites in that aspect in the flesh and in the aspect of circumcision of the flesh. No more is God looking at it that way. It's not literal anymore. It's changing. It's now that God looks at is one that's an Israelite in spirit, in heart, inside. And it's a circumcision of the heart. It's not the cutting away of physical flesh, but it's a circumcision of the heart. It's a cutting away of our human nature, our depraved nature. And that there's a separation that God's made with us now, that we are separate from that. When you're born again, you're no longer totally being controlled by that lustful nature. Yes, we struggle with it. We fight with it. But we have been cut away from it. And one day, praise be to God, when we die, that is gone from us. It's no longer, and we can be of a pure sense and a pure nature. But when the Scriptures talk... in this aspect, in that he waited for the consolation of Israel, he was talking in a physical sense, but Israel in that Old Testament is a picture of this spiritual Israel. The Israelites over there, starting with Abraham, was a chosen nation. We all understand that. God chose Abraham out of all of the races and all of the peoples of men. And not because he was a great nation, because all it was one man, you know, no great about it. But, and he told Abraham, you're going to be a father of many. And it took a while to get there. He was just, you know, the story goes, yes, he had several children, but the one that was the chosen one of God was Isaac. And here we get started with the situation. I said that wrong. That was one that had the 12 sons. Help me here. Who was his son? Who was Abraham's son? Huh? Isaac. Well, I said it right. Okay. So anyway, that confused me. I'm sorry. Anyway, we're good. So there's the physical, but it's the picture. It's not the physical anymore. That's a picture for us to see. We're physical people. And for us to understand spirituality, we can't do it in these bodies. We don't understand spirituality in these bodies. We can't even see spirituality. I verily believe there's angels in this room. Y'all see any of them? There was a man one time that was a servant of Elijah or Elisha, I forget which one, and he was a little concerned because a foreign army was coming in to get the prophet. And there was a lot of army soldiers out there with swords, and he was a little worried about the thing. And the servant of God told him to go out and look. And God opened his eyes, and there was the horseman of God, you know, just lying in the hills. His eyes were open to see the spiritual aspect. If our eyes were opened, I think we could see angels in the room. But the point I'm trying to say is, we're not spiritual unless God opens our eyes to see those things. And so he shows us in all of these natural examples. That's just basically what the Bible is, basically what I talk about. Basically, our understanding is, it's just like that idea of no longer is he an Israelite of nature and of the circumcision of the flesh, but it's one that's of the heart now. It's of a spiritual Israelite. The picture of the physical Israelites is the picture of the chosen or elect family of God. That's all that is. And when God closed the door at the time of Jesus with the Israelite race, it doesn't mean that they're all going to hell. Not what it's talking about. It's just that he was done with that picture. That picture's over. And now it's for us to understand try to understand in a spiritual sense of who it was. So I quickly go to the idea that this consolation of Israel is, and it's the consolation of Israel. And it's for the spiritual Israel. I immediately take, so it's for us. So we try to make it for us. Well, so we go to the word. Word means to alleviate. You know, we have taken from that word of alleviate. You can go down to the drugstore and you can get aspirin, you can get Tylenol, you can get Aleve. That's taken from the word. It's to reduce or lessen the pain that you have in your head, maybe. Or Brother Jackson's here today and he's having to go for surgery. He's got a cracked tooth. And he said, I said, oh, I'm glad you feel... I'm sorry you feel so bad. He said, well, basically, I'm just numb. I don't know what he's taken for it, but it's alleviating the situation. Maybe he took some Aleve. I don't know. You know what I mean? But that's the idea. There's consolation is to lessen the pain, lessen the struggle, make it easier. Jesus is such as being God. He not only can lessen it, he can totally remove it. If that's his. The consolation of Israel may carry the idea that here we are totally in pain and in living within ourselves without hope in this world before God and not even recognizing really there is a God. And in a spiritual, eternal sense, he paid the price and he alleviated the problem. I made one up. Brother Charles Godwin would do that. Fixed the problem. He made restitution so that we are now with God. No longer. There's a consolation in that aspect that we've been brought together. But I'm not thinking that this is exactly what that's talking about there. I think this is more of a here and now aspect of Jesus' work. Not his work on the cross so much to save his people, but his work to help his people here and now, as we go along in this world. So let's take a look. Let's go to Hebrews 2:18. This is where we'll start on this path of this idea. Hebrews 2:18. It's the last verse in Hebrews 2. It's talking about Jesus Christ. So when we get to he, we know that it's Jesus. For in that he himself has suffered, being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted, or succor them. That word is the same word as consolation. So Jesus Christ came to this world. He became a man. He had to become a man. I hope last Sunday you got that picture for him being the daysman. The daysman has to touch both parties, has to be able to understand more than just in knowledge, but to understand, to feel, to be part of that part. At the same time, so he had to become a man and be like us. At the same time, he was still God, and he understands that. So, and that's how he could be a mediator or a daysman, bringing the two sides together there. So here's another aspect of his work as a man, becoming a man. He didn't understand suffering firsthand. As God, obviously, he had knowledge of what suffering was. And he knows, in a sense of understanding it. But with a body, he could feel it, and now he knows. It's a little bit like the old story that you can't really help somebody because you don't really know their situation unless you walk a mile in his shoes. You really don't understand. If I'll just use this example quick. When Brother Ray passed away, and if I'd have gone to the sister here and just said, I understand, I feel, I know. I've never lost a spouse. I don't know her pain. I can imagine, but I don't know it until I've passed that way, till I've gone the mile in the shoes of that person. So here's Jesus Christ. He became a man. I mean, he had flesh and blood, and if he got cut, it bled. And it says that the Bible scripture says that he hungered. It says that he thirsted. It says that he was tired. It says he got weary in the way. He had emotion in the aspect. He cried at the tomb of Lazarus when our loved ones die. And we're there at the tomb or the casket's in front or you're in the nurse, I mean in the funeral home, and there's your loved one on the other side, there in the casket, and you're weeping and you're sad. Well, Jesus has literally experienced that. It's how you can be a consolation. And so that's what we're learning here. For in as much that he himself, I love that, as much that he himself, it wasn't somebody else. It's not a dream. It's not just him being God off to the side looking over at our sufferings and saying, yeah, I see what they're doing. No, he went over there. He himself hath suffered. He himself. You know, that's a little outside of the realm of me thinking about God sometimes. But he suffered. He himself suffered. Being tempted, not only suffered, you know, there's different ways of suffering here in this life. Sometimes, as I spoke earlier about the children of Israel, and they rebelled, and they rebelled, and they rebelled, and you suffer under God's hand with chastisement. All right? That's what happens. And it's suffering. But there's other times we just live in a broken world. Ask Sister Elaine or Sister Andrea. I don't think they did a sin and God cursed them with pneumonia. I don't believe that's what happened. Some religions do. I had a friend, a very close friend when I worked at George Parham Backcroft. Totally believed that. He truly thought. I was sick one time. We were at a meeting. And he got down on his knees in the bedroom at the motel. He and I were always put together because we were the two Bible thumpers amongst our, about the 17 or 18 inspectors. So they always paired us in that room together. And it was fine. I enjoyed being with him. He literally got on his knees and begging God to show me what sin I committed so that I would then repent of it and the cold would go away. I'm serious. He was serious. He was serious. I mean, totally serious. That's not the way it is. We live in a broken world. Yes, we're sinners, but yes, we live in a broken world, and these things happen to us. So sometimes we suffer at no fault of our own, and sometimes we suffer at fault of our own. So that's the way it is. So here's Jesus, and it's saying here with him, for in that he himself hath suffered being tempted. So not only did he suffer at things that just happened, but he was also tempted. Now, he was without sin. We have to say that. We have to understand that. We're sinners, and we can be tempted and drawn away in our lust for something that we so much desire that it's just to heck with everything I know is good. I'm going down this path. It don't matter what. Excuse the gruffness of it, but you get the picture of what it is. Jesus wasn't in that way, but he was tempted. He was tempted in several ways. You remember after 40 days of 40 days and nights of not eating and drinking, immediately Satan was there and tempted him those three times. Do you remember that? He's been tempted. Scripture says that he was tempted in all points like as we. He understands temptation. So if you are tempted and you lust after something, he understands it. And so because of that, being tempted, he is able to succor them that are tempted. He is able to counsel them, to console them, to relieve them, to alleviate the pain. Jesus is able to do that. Here he is. He said, I came into this world not to be ministered to, but to minister. He wants to minister to every one of us. He loves each one of you. He loves you. He died on the cross for you. He came to this stinky world and live amongst stinky people. And I don't mean those that haven't taken a shower. I mean sinners. That's what I'm talking about. And here he is. He came because of his love. What held him on the cross? Do you think it was those nails? No way. No way that held him on. It was his love for the people and knowing this is what had to be done if this chosen generation, this chosen people, this elect family of God was to ever live with him in glory, the sins had to be paid. He was the only one that could pay it. He was in a body for the suffering of death, and he hung on the cross for his love of his people. It's totally what did it. At the same time, his love for his people, he wants to help each and every one of us. Now, where we stand on the other side of the fence, and certainly is where I am, I just want to get away from all the problems. Lord, please just give me a few minutes of just away from it. We're not promised that. I was listening to a sermon this week by Elder. I don't know if they called him Elder or not. Charles Spurgeon. You know, he lived a couple hundred years ago. And so I was listening to one of his sermons. He said something that just I'd never really thought about. He said, you know, when it comes to suffering, maybe we ought to embrace it. Just get ready. You know it's coming. The Bible's been clear. In this world you shall have tribulation. No suffering's coming. So just get ready for it and embrace it and say, okay, Lord, it's come. And how are you going to deal with it then? Well, we'll learn more about it, but here's one clue in it. In that he suffered, now he's able to succor those or succor those or console those, console others. Well, let's move on a little bit. Let's go to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 4. Let's go with verse 3. The Apostle Paul speaking here. Blessed be God, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercies, and the God of all comfort. Well, isn't that interesting? The God of all comfort. I wonder if that all is inclusive. You know, when the boys was growing up, I kept trying to explain to them that all doesn't always mean, or excuse me, all always has an exception. Except when you're talking about God. God's all powerful. God's all knowing. God's omnipresent. He's all everywhere, all the time. So when you're talking about God and it's all, there is no exception. But when you're talking about here on earth, there is an exception to all, always. That's confusing, maybe, a little bit of trickery thinking, but you have to stop and think about it. So here it says that he's the Father. This is just beautiful. Blessed be God. You know, I think back of what I talked about last Sunday with Job. And Job, didn't understand who Jesus Christ was. He just understood God. And maybe as the judge, just one, and that things, the righteous one, and things had to be done right. And if you don't do them right, you know, if you know you've done something wrong, and you're in the courtroom, and there's the judge, there's a fear, isn't there? Well, that's kind of the way Job was looking at God. He didn't know at that time that there's this intercessor in between. So maybe in this sense, when Paul's talking, blessed be God, maybe he's thinking people are thinking of God that way. So he says, even the Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. Well, Jesus Christ, the intercessor. So it starts to maybe give us a different perspective of who God is. That here he has sent Jesus to alleviate, to console us, to pay for our sins, to relieve us of our problems. That this God maybe isn't completely just fearful of him. And it goes on to say, the Father of mercies. His mercies are new every morning. There's piles of mercy coming to us every day. If God just pulled the curtain back at that much for us to see what we should have got and didn't, I think it'd just blow us over. God is full of mercy. And then it says, the God of all comfort. What do you reckon that all there means? Do you think there's comfort somewhere else? If you find comfort somewhere else, do you think ultimately it came through God? Is this all inclusive? All comfort? Is there any comfort in the world? I'll ask that. Did Moses find comfort being the son of Pharaoh's daughter and having being the second in order of command of the nation of Egypt, which at that time was, you know, maybe the first world order of you know, or first largest nation? Well, he says that he would rather suffer the children of Israel than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season. Yeah, maybe there's some pleasure there, but he didn't call it comfort, if you see what I'm saying. So I'm saying maybe this is talking about that if you get true spiritual comfort, all of that comfort comes from God. And then keep going here, this Apostle Paul talking, who comforteth us. He's talking, Apostle Paul, when he says us, he's talking about himself and the other apostles, who comforteth us in all our tribulation. So he's talking about, I mean, immediately the Apostle Paul, my goodness, how many times was he whipped? He was stoned one time. I mean, this man went through a shipwreck. He said he spent a day in the night in the deep, I forget how long it was, hanging on to a piece of wood in a storm that was probably hurricane-like in the Mediterranean. That's a tribulation, wondering if you're ever going to live or not. And he's saying, you think about that it's us, it's the other apostles. Some of the apostles had already been put to death by Herod and the Romans. It's you know, it's a struggle. There is tribulation going on. And he's saying that this God of mercy who comforteth us in our tribulation, why? Why is he comforting us in our tribulation? That we may be able to comfort them that are in any trouble by the comfort wherewith we ourselves received comfort of God. So here's, we start to get this picture of tribulation. Maybe it's why Charles Spurgeon was saying that we need to embrace it. There's something good that can come out of tribulation. I want to avoid it at all cost. I mean, avoid it at all cost. And yet when it comes on, then I'm a little bitter when it happens. I'm a little frustrated about the situation. And I'm going to probably miss what could be out of it. If we're maybe embrace the tribulation that's coming, how would it have been if Jesus just said, I'm going to avoid all the tribulation? I just don't want it. And he could have. You know what I mean? He just said, no, I ain't doing that. How would he have been the one that can comfort you then? Wouldn't happen, would it? Apostle Paul says, us apostles are being terrible tribulation on us. And it's given to us that we may be able to comfort them which are in any trouble. The Apostle Paul saying to the folks, I know y'all got troubles. We've had troubles, and we're able now to comfort you. Do you see the picture, the pattern that's happening here? That's what I wanted to get to. So here we are, trying to get it to make it personal. We all have troubles. It's like I was talking about a minute ago between Sister Nancy losing Brother Ray, and if I try to go comfort her, I can't do it. But there's others in the room that may have lost a spouse. Us, Sister Hannah. I know Sister Nancy talked to Sister Hannah. Sister Ann. I know Sister Nancy went and talked to Sister Ann after Brother Charlie died. Do you see the picture? She went through that trial. Forgive me for pointing you out, Sister, but it's a good picture in my thinking right here in this room. She went through it, a tribulation, a struggle, and went through it. A few days ago, I saw my wife slipping away. I watched it in the room. It happened so fast, I didn't really grasp it at the time. It was a few hours later when it dawned on me, oh my goodness, what has just happened? But it didn't happen. So I can't go to Sister Ann and comfort her. I can't go to Sister Hannah maybe. But Sister Nancy had gone through that path, gone through that tribulation, and she knows how God helped her. She's told me how God's helped her. So we all have these struggles. I don't know exactly what Charles Spurgeon meant by embracing it, like, oh, goody, goody, Lord, I've got a trial. I don't think that was the point. I think maybe it was more to say, in my mind, said, Lord, I know I'm a sinner. I know I live in a broken world. And I don't like what's happening. It's okay to tell God that. You don't like it. There's nothing wrong with that. I told my mom and dad of things I didn't like. And I don't think I was being wrong. Now, sometimes I told them things I didn't like. And it was wrong of me to say that. But y'all are smart people. You know the difference, all right? That trials come on us. And we need to try to learn experience as Jesus did. He was given a body in a body so that he could suffer, so that he could then go out and be a consolation to people. And we need to embrace those sufferings, even though we don't like them. They're coming. But that we can learn from those things. And then when something happens in the room with somebody else, I'm talking especially Dallas Church right now, that we can be a consolation. We can alleviate. We're not going to be like Jesus and be able to maybe just totally remove it. But even with Jesus, do you remember the Apostle Paul had a thorn in his side? I don't know if it was a literal thorn, a figurative thorn. It don't matter what the thorn was. It just don't try to figure it out. Don't get tied up in that whirlwind because it'll pull you away from the point. He prayed 3 times, said, Lord, remove this thorn from me. And God said to him, no, I'm not going to do it, but my grace is sufficient. And Paul learned that he could rely on God to give him the strength through that suffering. God's going to give us the strength to rely on him as we go through the suffering, whether it's death, whether it's illness, emotional, depression. It doesn't matter what it is. God's going to give it to you. So don't get hung up that here I'm in this trouble. I'm in this tribulation. I don't understand why. I'm a mess. And you just go off into wild blue yonder with your thoughts. Embrace the aspect that what can I learn through this that I might be a blessing to somebody else as Jesus is a blessing to me and to all of us here and now. How can I be a blessing to somebody going through this process as the Apostle Paul and the other apostles learned through their tribulations to help the church folks they were going to? How can we be a blessing to each other? Folks, Elaine and I have, especially Elaine, have felt this, what I'm talking about. I'm almost like, is this really a coincidence that Elaine got so sick over the last 2 weeks when I'm studying this? I started studying this before she got sick. This church has poured out its love and its prayers, its concern, trying to alleviate Elaine's situation. All of our hands are too short. The doctor's hands were too short to just, zoop, it's gone. And we don't know where she's going to come back to. Sister Andrea, are you going to return back to full health as before? We don't know. We live in hope. So does Elaine. Elaine now is in discouragement. She's been made so low, it's just, it's getting between her ears. So if you have a mind that you've prayed so much before, now you know more what to pray for. I've been in discouragement. I don't like it. Others in this room have been in different levels of discouragement. Learn from that. And if you know of somebody, and now I literally mentioned one, you know more how to pray for them. You know more how maybe to help them in their discouragement. So here we are, Dallas Church. God is the ultimate consolation of Israel. But we can be little consolations of Israel. We can be little consolations for each other in Dallas Church. As I said before, I wouldn't be any good at the loss of a spouse. Elaine and I went through some serious times with our marriage, mostly over finances, but it was over some other things. And God's blessed us to come through. I'm able to, in that category, help some other families that's been in struggle. I've been asked to, especially since I've been ordained. I've been asked three times to do marriage counseling. I'm like, whoa, Lord, wait a minute. I don't have any training in marriage counseling, you know. But I've had experience in it. I went through some trials. And I trust it was helpful to the people. They said it was. Elaine and I just talked to them about what you see the point I'm getting at. I say, I know you're brilliant people. So down in South Georgia, this happens. The folks here that's from South Georgia know what I'm talking about. When somebody dies, especially in the church that you're a member of, but the community down there is so tight, it really didn't matter if they were even a member of your church. If somebody died, I mean within hours, the men are there with lawnmowers and pickup trucks, trimming hedges, snippers, and they come in, and the family that lost their loved one, before the day's over, typically, if not then, the next day, is made as immaculate as possible. Immediately. The men do that. I don't know who heads it up. Maybe you can ask them or I should ask them. But you go in the house and some sisters have come in and they've cleaned the house. Now some, I don't know how y'all are, but Elaine would just shudder at the idea of somebody, she's going to clean her own house. Thank you very much. But at this situation, they go in and do it. And then the other sisters start cooking. Some bring food and cook on the spot. Others bring in food. Folks, I've seen so much food. They had it all over the counters. Every table brought in card tables that we used to call them, you know, and put them up and just food everywhere. Do you see what's going on? It's the consolation of Israel. It's alleviating as much pain as they can, doing what they can for each other. So y'all were away from Elaine and I at the hospital. And prayers, my goodness, I spent hours a day texting people. I'm glad we have GroupMe here. That helped me tremendously. But there must have been 30 or 40 other people, individual. And several times I was just going to group them together, but I never did. So anyway, just text. What a blessing we have texting. I mean, just what a blessing. There was a few of you that came to visit, and bless your hearts, Elaine enjoyed it. We learned, we didn't realize at first, that her heart was such that she has about that much energy. And the doctors and the nurses realized that in about 15 minutes, she's wiped out. And even though she sits there with a smile on her face, it wasn't good. So I put the word out to you. I hope I didn't offend anybody. We just can't come and spend a lot of time with her. And it's just too taxing on her. So here we are as Dallas Church. We have our different trials that maybe we can reach out and help somebody else. Maybe and we don't want to be the kind of people like where we were members of a church in North Carolina many years ago. And there was a sweet sister there, but she loved the attention of how bad she felt. And you go up to her, I'm literal, saying, "Sister, how are you doing today? And she would go, well, not much good. And then she had her list. And you were stuck for, if you were kind, for 20 to 30 minutes. You see, she was, her tribulations became something that she focused toward herself, not to help others. That's something I want to, and we're all that way. I mean, to some level or degree, we're all that way. Don't think, well, I'm free of that, because that's pride, all right? But at the same hand, don't go tilt, Claire, in the other direction, where all you think about is how bad you feel, because now you're not a consolation anymore. You're a pain in a part of the body you don't want to talk about, all right? You're just a pain. And we don't want to be a pain. We want to be helpful to each other is what we want. We have to consider ourselves and what we have and our strength and our weaknesses, at the same time being wise, at the same time being wise, I'll say it again, at the same time being wise, at what we can do to help the other one. Maybe it's simply praying, which actually, when I say simply, why does prayer seem like it's the bottom thing you can do? You need to turn, you know, if prayer's here, you need to turn your list over. Put it on top. We want to do physical is basically what we want to do. That's why prayer seems so small. Prayer is the biggest thing you can do. Elaine said multiple times, I feel the prayers of those praying for me. I've never been that low. I shouldn't say that. I'm wrong. When I was exercising here, I wasn't low, so it's a different thing. But I could tell Dallas Church was praying for me when I was exercising and getting up to where I'm being ordained. And even to this morning, I can tell you're praying for me. You can feel the prayers. I've never been so low maybe as an illness that I could feel that. Maybe that's what I'm saying. But we can pray for each other. I think it's wonderful Dallas Church sends the card out. I'll just be more by name again, more specific. One of our members, Sister Allison, lost her dad a few weeks ago. How many of you have reached out? I'm not want to be beating you up at all. But maybe we should try to put ourselves in position. I lost my dad. I really appreciated some of the phone calls I got. I really appreciated some of the cards I got. And I still have a couple of the plants that came from the funeral that was over 10 years ago. One of them was from Dallas Church. And every time I see that plant, I think about my daddy, but I more think about Dallas Church and their love to me to give us that plant. Now, I've about killed it twice, and Sister Judy has revived it and brought it back home to me. But you see what I'm saying. We need to be so wise as, do I go? Do I take food? Do I go mow their yard? Do I pray for them? Do I send a card? Do I call them on the phone? You know, just we have to use our wisdom and then understanding that our consolation to help them is a biggest help when it's in the same vein, if you get my talking about. So what a blessing. That's the biggest thing I want to say to you all. If you felt like I'm getting on your toes, there's absolutely not. Absolutely not. And part of the reason I had that prayer this morning for Sean and for Brother Mike, there's power in prayer. Our prayers have zero power. If everybody, I mean everybody on planet Earth, what is there, 7 billion people on planet Earth estimated right now, if they all thought about me for the next minute, all 7 billion of them, what good is it going to do me? Oh, it'd be nice, you know, puff my ego up. It's the man, it's who we're praying to is why our prayers work. It's not that we're praying, you know, that my prayer is going to help one of you. It's me praying to God, and that prayer is then answered by God, and there's where the power is. There's where it is. We can pray for each other, and then we can console or help alleviate or give relief or maybe help restore somebody that's in need. And by, as I'll say again, by wisdom. By wisdom. I don't know how all that works. Don't ask me how it all works. I don't know. We can talk to each other about it. We can learn each other who we are better and understand each other's different idiosyncrasies, shall we say. Some people like visits. Some people would prefer a card. Some people would like to come clean the house for them. I guess. I don't know how many of you sisters would like, you know, 10 other sisters come clean your house for you, but well, I'll leave that where it is. But you see what I'm saying. I think, like I said earlier, you're smart people. You get the point. He waited, Simeon waited, and he got to hold the consolation of Israel. Jesus is our consolation. If you, in any sense, are a consolation to somebody, it's the God of all comfort. You see what I'm saying? He's using you to get to them. He's using you. And in the aspect of doing that, you're blessed. Isn't that wild? That your suffering, that your misery can then be taken and go over here to help somebody, and God uses you, and you get the blessing out of your misery. It's just wild how God works. We are so blessed. Elaine has said that over and over and over. She said, I want to be so much better than I am right now. I can't stand it. But she said, I could be so much worse. I could be so much worse. So we're blessed. And she keeps saying that. I am so blessed. Folks, we are so blessed. I pray Dallas Church, and those of you that aren't part of Dallas Church, I pray that we all can just be a comfort, be a lifeline, be something that our afflictions can help somebody. I just thought of this. I was going to quit, but I just thought of this. There was a sister in South Georgia that one day backed out of her garage going to town. She thought she knew where her children were. And she backed out over one of her children and the baby died. I can't think of things much worse than that. She ached and grieved for years. Seemed like she couldn't get over it. And then she said, God has blessed me to where if somebody loses their child, I can now go help them. That's what saved her. She said, that's what got me out of my grief. To know I could, my pain was not for zero, but it was for help for others. That's what I'm talking about, embracing our struggles. That we can then go help others in our struggles. God bless each and every one of you.